50 years ago today, voters in Jacksonville approved consolidation of city and county governments. Did it deliver on its promises? A closer look just ahead. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen to us there anytime. You can also stream us live right now on Facebook. Just ahead, today, the city marks the golden anniversary of consolidation. Did it improve things in Jacksonville, or are we still behind where we need to be? What do you think? Give us a call as we talk about this golden anniversary and how it changed Duval County forever. The number to join us, 549-2937. Then later, Russian intrigue, but not involving the Trump administration for a change. First Coast Connect book club blogger Stacy Goldring will join us to talk about the New York Times bestseller, A Gentleman in Moscow. Plus, later on, our tech guru Ray Hollister has some great ideas about apps that might help your kids with their homework as they head back to class. All of that ahead. But first, this hour today, August 8th, marks the 50th anniversary of a watershed moment for Jacksonville. On August 8th, 1967, Duval County citizens voted to consolidate county and city governments into the single city of Jacksonville. Now, that vote created what is now the largest city by area in the contiguous United States and the 12th largest by population. The voters chose consolidation because things were, frankly, a mess at the time. Everything from government corruption to duplication of city and county services, fiscal instability, and the worst of all, disaccredited schools. Now, the landmark consolidation decision was praised at the time as a model of good government and municipal innovation. On the other hand, critics have long said consolidation had negative effects, in particular, producing something of a tale of two cities in Jacksonville, often leaving poorer and African-American neighborhoods behind. So on this 50th anniversary, has consolidation delivered on its promises? We're going to take a closer look right now as we welcome in studio attorney, former City Hall staffer, and author Chris Hand. He's co-author of America, the Owner's Manual. He has some thoughts about the golden anniversary. Chris, always good to see you. Good morning.
Good to see you, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
And here's our question to callers. Today marks the 50th anniversary of consolidation in Jacksonville. Do you know about this? And what are your questions and comments about how it has affected the city? Give us a call. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Or weigh in on Facebook, where we are streaming this show live right now on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. And so, when you look at today's Florida Times Union, there's this great old photo of all the city leaders at the time, 50 years ago today, celebrating this big vote, Chris. And what I did not realize is when voters were asked to decide this, the anti-consolidation people were calling it a communist plot. Pretty interesting history
scary
there.
Scary stuff, right. I mean, throwing a lot of charges like that. And, of course, it passed overwhelmingly, almost 2-1. And it was a moment of great civic pride for Jacksonville and, you know, correctly so. You have to remember where the city was on August 8th, 1967. Former Mayor Hans Tanzer once said that without consolidation, we would have been in rubble. And I think he's right in many ways. Jacksonville had seen a series of very serious corruption scandals with multiple local elected officials indicted, many fiscal problems, largely driven by a very unwieldy local government. At that time, Jacksonville had a city commission and a city council and a county commission causing that problem. And as you mentioned, the disaccreditation of schools. The St. Johns River was, they thought at that point, hopelessly polluted. It was a tough time, and this was an opportunity for voters to make a change, and they did so overwhelmingly 50 years ago today.
And how was consolidation sold as a way to eliminate duplication of city and county services, get some corrupt officials out of office, things like that?
That was certainly part of it. I think another part of it was at that point in time in the late 60s, you had sort of a core city in Jacksonville, which is where the city limits were, and you had rapidly expanding areas outside of the core cities and Southside and other parts of town that were using some of those city services but didn't have a voice in those city decisions. So certainly the challenges of what were going on in Jacksonville were very much a substantial part of that. But there was also a sense of representation for the entire county.
We'll go to your calls in a moment as we talk about Jacksonville's 50th anniversary of consolidation. It's today. The number to join us is 549-2937. And so when the landmark vote came down 50 years ago today, we became the largest city in America in terms of land mass, because Duval County is big, and making it all one big city county government was a big deal at the time.
Well, and it was very innovative. I mean, at that point, it hadn't been done very often. At that point, I think our only predecessor was Nashville, where Nashville and Metro Davidson County in Tennessee had merged together. In many ways, Jacksonville sort of launched a movement that took place in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where some large communities did this. Louisville, Kentucky is consolidated. City of Indianapolis and Indiana is consolidated. Mm-hmm. There are other examples around the country. But at the time, Jacksonville was seen very much as a municipal innovator taking this step to consolidated city and county governments. Really hailed.
Yeah. And what do you see, Chris Hand, as the biggest positive long-term impacts of consolidation for this area?
Well, I think it's provided efficiency and accountability that have given Jacksonville the platform to make some of its greatest achievements over the last 50 years. The late Mayor Ed Austin once said that there's no chance Jacksonville could have ever gotten the Jaguars without consolidated government. And I think that's right, because it enabled the city to be responsive and sort of nimble in responding to the NFL's requests. I think if you look at any accomplishment over the last 50 years, it probably does not happen without consolidation. But there are promises that were made during the consolidation vote that were not kept. And I think the 50th anniversary of consolidation is an opportunity to recommit to keeping those promises.
Yeah, and what were some of the biggest promises that voters bought that you think, really, we just have not seen the progress that we needed to see?
Well, the way that many neighborhoods were persuaded to support consolidation, particularly those neighborhoods in what was called the Old City, the former city limits of Jacksonville, kind of the urban core, was that, look, by going through consolidation, those of you in the center city or the urban city might lose some political power, but what you're going to gain is support for economic development, infrastructure like roads and water and sewer, and improved public education. Well, we've seen the loss in political power, but what we have not necessarily seen is keeping of a number of those promises about infrastructure and other economic development and school improvements in some of those areas.
So in particular, African Americans in the city lost political power. If we had not consolidated, would our city look more like, say, New Orleans, Atlanta, a city like that, where you see a much more muscular African-American political class?
Well, I'll just use the numbers that are in Richard Martin's sort of classic book about consolidation, which is A Quiet Revolution. And the numbers he cites there is that pre-consolidation, the African-American community had about 40% of the vote. That cut almost in half as a result of the change in consolidation. So there's no doubt there was a change there. But what at the time city leaders said to affected communities was, even though that change is occurring, we're going to bring positive changes in infrastructure, economic development, schools, and those promises have been much slower to be kept.
Yeah, I mean, many neighborhoods in the city proper still without good infrastructure, without even good sewer service. Lots of people still on septic tanks in this city 50 years later.
Well, just to put a sort of a specific point on it, several years ago, the city council led by Lori Boyer did a task force reviewing consolidated government, and that task force concluded that there are miles of unpaved road and hundreds, if not thousands, of homes and businesses in this city that are still not connected to water lines or sewer lines around this city. That is, again, with all of Jacksonville's accomplishments, that is a challenge that the city, I think, really should use this consolidation opportunity to get on top of, recommit to keeping those promises as we begin to move into the next era of consolidation.
And as you noted in a recent op-ed, the city and JEA have recently tried to attack some of these longstanding problems. They launched a $30 million effort to replace failing septic tanks all over the city in 2017.
Right. There, I think there have been some positive steps forward just in the last year, that agreement between the city and JEA to replace septic tanks. There are some projects in Mayor Curry's recommended budget this year that address some issues in Northwest and East Jacksonville. But there's a long way to go. These are first steps. When, you know, unkept promises accumulate over a 50-year period, there's a lot of work still to be done. It looks like now the city of Jacksonville might have some budget capacity that it hasn't had in years past. And there are some reforms and other innovations I think both the city and state governments can pursue to help address this problem going forward.
All right. And if you're just tuning in, today, August 8th, marks the 50th anniversary of Jacksonville voters deciding to consolidate the city and county governments, making us the largest city in the country in terms of our land mass. What do you think consolidation has wrought? What changes do you still think need to be made? Give us a call, 549-2937. Dave is in Mandarin. Hey, Dave, you know, if they hadn't consolidated, you would not be a resident of the city of Jacksonville today. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. That's a very interesting discussion, and I was not here for the vote because I moved to Jacksonville from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1974. I would have to contrast the quality of life we have in Jacksonville, which is terrific, compared to the different qualities of life that you have in a city that's not consolidated because of the differences and many different, you know, I came from a small community outside the city of Pittsburgh. There were many of them. And if you lived in a prosperous community, you had good services. And if you had a not so prosperous community, you had poor services. And while there have been, I guess, you've identified some shortfalls and people are disappointed about what hasn't happened, I think when you look at the city of Jacksonville, you just have to say we're very blessed to have a consolidated government and to have the accountability and the services that are provided. You know, even though we've still got a way to go, we're way better off.
Thanks, Dave. And overall, would you agree that overall the benefits have outweighed the negatives?
I think there's no question that the modern Jacksonville has been made in many ways on the platform of consolidation. It has major benefits. I don't think Jacksonville would have seen some of the successes it has but for this momentous vote that Jacksonville citizens made on August 8th, 1967, 50 years ago today. So completely agree with Dave that there have been many accomplishments and our quality of life is very much tied to having consolidation. I think that said, one of the best ways to celebrate an anniversary like this is to do what Dave has done and say, where has consolidation succeeded and where has it not yet succeeded, so that we can help make sure that the benefits of consolidation, which are many, extend to every citizen here in Jacksonville.
549-2937, what would you like to see done to keep improving the quality of life in your corner of Jacksonville? Let's go to Bill, also in Mandarin. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning. I think it's time for a look at the change in governance and do a reset. The current model is based on the needs of the 1960s. We probably need to look at it. I think we're the only city with 19 city councilmen and 800,000 people. I would suggest, for example, cutting the city council down to 7 is a good first step.
Thanks for that. Yeah, do we need 19 city council people? And that was created 50 years ago, wasn't it? Before that, you had a city, a council, and a county commission. They got rid of the county commissioners.
Well, in some ways, Melissa, our city council is actually small compared to some other consolidated governments. I can't remember the exact number, but for example, in Nashville, the Metro Davidson County, their equivalent of the city council is perhaps double the size of ours here. There have been proposals to do that, to reduce the size of the city council. And one of the positives that the framers of consolidation put in was every 10 years we review the charter here in Jacksonville to decide through the Charter Review Commission to decide if there are changes like that that may need to be made. The Charter Review Commission is scheduled to reconvene in 2019. That may be one of the reforms among others. Citizens have an opportunity to bring proposed reforms. And so, Bill, you or others may want to suggest that or other reforms in that process.
Now, as you've been pointing out, Chris, this has provided for better, more efficient government in so many ways. On the other hand, this is the largest city in the country in terms of its land mass. Duval County is just vast. It's such a far-flung place, and that brings with it sprawl, dependence on car culture. What about the negatives to that in terms of the challenges urban planners face when they look at the built environment and they're trying to encourage more walkable communities, more public transportation? When you consolidate a city like this and we're such a huge, far-flung place, sprawled out place, it doesn't really lend itself to those types of changes.
Well, except for here's one advantage of consolidation in that regard. I don't think sprawl is a foreign concept to any county in Florida. But the difference between Jacksonville and those counties is, in order to, say, get a handle on the sprawl problem, municipal governments have to agree with the county government. There's a lot of different entities that have to be rowing in the same direction. One benefit of Jacksonville being consolidated is if a decision is made to address sprawl, and that's a different question, what the substance of the decision is, but if a decision is made to do that, there is one government that makes that decision, that sets that vision, and then is held accountable for that vision. So I would say in many ways consolidation has better positioned us to deal with issues like sprawl than many other counties where you're trying to get multiple cities, towns, and county and other governments on the same page.
And by the way, I was fascinated to read in the paper today that when they did the vote 50 years ago, outlying small communities, they were overwhelmingly against this, like Bayard, Baldwin, and Neptune Beach. They were the naysayers. They said, no, we don't want this.
Well, and I think one of the ways they were able to pass consolidation, we did not use a what some in the governance field would call a pure consolidation model. We used a little bit of a hybrid in the sense that the compromise that was struck was Baldwin and the three beaches communities, Jacksonville Beach, Neptune Beach, Atlantic Beach, maintained some self-government.
Which they do to this day.
Mm-hmm. So again, that's part of the political compromise that often goes into these kinds of votes. But one of the ways they were able to pass consolidation so significantly was to reach those kinds of agreements and use a little bit of a hybrid version of consolidation.
Here, we'll go back to your calls in a moment. If you're just tuning in, today marks the 50th anniversary of consolidation in Jacksonville. What are your questions about that? It's 549-2937. Meanwhile, lots of tweets. Here's one from Brian. If there is any change in the number of city councilmen, I am for more, not less. Let more areas and more people have a clearer voice. Do you feel under this system of government, Chris Hand, that people's voices are heard, that there's adequate representation spread around this big, huge area?
Well, I think there one sort of benefit, and I think there's a way to look at this in two ways. One benefit of consolidation is it's very clear which government is accountable and where voters or citizens need to direct their concerns. We have a mayor. We have 19 city council members. So I think in terms of figuring out where do I make my voice heard, that's very clear. Now, that might mean there are fewer points of access than there would be in counties that aren't consolidated. But I think one benefit of this form of government is that you do have absolute clarity on who in government can solve your problem.
Jerry is up in Fernandina Beach, not in Duval County, Nassau County. Hey, Jerry, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. First time caller, long time listener.
Great. Thanks for calling.
I was just wondering, could your guest explain to me the difference between consolidation and annexation?
Sure. Great question. Thanks for that.
Sure. Well, thanks for the call. Consolidation is when, particularly in this case, an electorate chooses to combine two different types of government. In Jacksonville's case, it was a city government with a county government, which essentially, except in sort of a few sort of distinct ways, eliminated the county government. So that's taking different types of government within a particular geographic territory and combining them. Annexation is when one government acquires from another government a piece of property that they own. So let's take Nassau County, for example, where you live. If Fernandina Beach decided that it wanted to annex some part of unincorporated Nassau County outside the borders of Fernandina Beach, it would need to reach an agreement with Nassau County and probably have a vote of the people who lived in that area who would then agree to sort of join Fernandina Beach. So that's taking part of territory that belongs to a different entity. Consolidation is actually combining two entities as opposed to just sort of acquiring part of it.
And for people in Nassau, St. John's, Flagler, Putnam, Baker, how do you think consolidation improved their lives as well?
Well, that's
improved the whole region.
Well, I think there's a lot of arguments that it did. That sort of it made Jacksonville to some extent the sort of epicenter and hub of the entire region, and probably helped coordinate a more regional approach because again, you had one single government in Jacksonville doing it. But for all of consolidation's advantages, and they are many, I think it is important not to lose sight. You know, we're going to have a big sort of period of time over the next year. August 8, 1967 is when the voters passed consolidation. October 1, 1968 is when the city of Jacksonville actually was born as this new entity. That's when it was implemented.
And then they said, we're the bold new city of the South,
correct.
That whole thing. Okay.
Exactly. And so we've now got a 14-month period between these two anniversaries to really sort of take a look at consolidation and figure out where are the areas where consolidation has not provided benefits where it should have to the entire community. Councilwoman Lori Boyer's task force did some work on this several years ago and actually proposed some ordinance changes that have not yet been passed by council that could help to address some of these issues. For example, one of the recommendations that task force made was to dedicate a percentage of the capital improvements program budget each year, that's the city's infrastructure budget, to addressing some of the unfulfilled promises of consolidation, and also recommended that the independent authorities like JTA and JEA do the same thing. That's the type of legislation that could, if introduced and passed by city council, could really have a big impact. And I know there are certain city council people who are starting to look at those recommendations and say, which ones have we not yet implemented that we should go ahead and implement? I would respectfully suggest that this might be one of them.
And as we talk to attorney and author Chris Hand about the 50th anniversary of consolidation in Jacksonville, it's today. I urge everyone to read Matt Sorgel's great article in today's Florida Times Union about this, looking back at the history. There were lots of opponents to this. They said, and I'm quoting, consolidating the central city and the entire county into one big new city, people said, was an ultra-liberal big government plot by elitists who thought they knew best, a communist plot even. Some called it machine politics. At its worst, pushed by federal commissars in Washington. One state representative complained that there is nothing desirable or attractive about big, centralized, boss-controlled government. In fact, you'll learn in the paper that the for and against headquarters were right across the street from each other in 1967, literally squaring off. Really neat history there.
Well, and these were, you know, this was a time where there were the pro-consolidation forces were called the White Hats. The anti-consolidation forces were called the Black Hats. It really had this pro and con sort of feel to it.
Why did they allow themselves to be called the Black Hats?
That's a very good question. But, you know, again, the forces that were supporting consolidation, again, were able to persuade the electorate by a 2-to-1 margin what was happening in city government then was not acceptable and needed to be changed.
There was a lot of corruption. There were people on the take. I mean, it was not a model of good governance.
Just the opposite.
Okay.
Just the opposite.
Conrad on the north side. Hi, Conrad. Good morning.
Good morning. This is something I could go on for 10 minutes about easily. But anyway, I've been involved in several JCCI studies, the Charter Revision Commission hearings. I monitored all these different things. I was in a foreign land when all this took place. My mama was very heavily against it. Being a member of a family that had property in several outlying areas of the county outside city limits, it was very suspect. We got one thing there's undoubtedly one thing that I have to say now was not there is the fire protection. We had to rely on volunteers and volunteer fire departments and the forestry department. No fire and rescue. Of course, the city didn't have that yet either, but that all came because of this. The core city was crumbling. The tax situation there was horrible. The old JPD When you look at Martin's book on the Quiet Revolution, you will find Dr. Hallett, when he pushes this thing now about putting the sheriff on the mayor's thumb, read what the structure of the old JPD was, when you had six or seven police chiefs answering to the police commissioner, who was Mayor Lou Ritter at the time of consolidation.
Huh.
Oh, rue the day that we had perpetuated that. And the councilmen at large represent the five county commissioners prior to consolidation. That was a way to bring the old government fully into the consolidated government with the existing city council districts and make that connection. But anyway, my own pet peeve now is we pay lip service to fair due process for property owners who are continually denied their rights, especially if they tangle with the Department of Greatest Despotism in this city, the Department of Code Compliance. They are fueled by illiteracy. There is no hope under our current guarantees with a two-year time limit to lodge complaints when you have a problem with the hierarchy of the bureaucracies in this new city government. You cannot penetrate the diamond hard layer, the strata at the very top of our bureaucracies. And I'll get off my.
All right, Conrad. Yeah, and
I
hear you. Okay, what about his comment there, particularly what he said at the end? As someone, you worked in City Hall,
sure.
So what about his comment?
Well, first of all, very interesting historical perspective, and I think Conrad addressed one of the benefits of consolidation, one of the reasons it came about, which was that folks who lived outside the core city felt like they were that was an increasingly growing areas, and they wanted to have some say in what was happening in Jacksonville, and the extension of fire rescue was something Conrad mentioned. You know, one of the things, Conrad said he's obviously been very involved in JCCI and others, and so he probably knows this. But I think, again, one of the advantages of consolidation that I'd recommend Conrad use to take up his code compliance concern is the fact that, again, we have one government who can address this. There are, in Conrad's case, he has a district city council person and five at-large city council people who represents him. So that's 6 points of access on the city council to raise and get that concern addressed. So I'd say, in this case, I'd say take advantage of what consolidation offers, which is a very clear path to who in government can help you solve that problem, which is, I think, most immediately those six city council members who represent you.
And by the way, you talk about how to do this in the book that you co-authored with Senator Bob Graham, America, the Owner's Manual, How You Can Fight City Hall and Win. Just some easy tactics for getting your problems addressed in local government that you recommend.
That's right. I mean, there are a series of skills of effective citizenship that all of us as Americans can use to make government respond. And one of the chapters of the book is about knowing which level of government and who in government can solve your problem. Again, I think one of the attributes of consolidation that could help a challenge like Conrad's is knowing that the city of Jacksonville owns any problem like this, and there are some distinct and clear points of access to try and get them to solve it.
Chuck tweets the show. We talked about how consolidation made us a sprawling area. Chuck tweets, to curb sprawl, downtown must become a residential and shopping destination, and we need light rail up and down I-95. Thanks for that, Chuck. Let's take a few more calls. It's 549-2937 as we talk about the 50th anniversary of consolidation in Jacksonville. Scott on the north side. Hey, Scott. Good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning. It just seems to me like the biggest benefit of consolidation, and y'all talked about a little bit, is there'd be some kind of standard of services or infrastructure. I live on the north side in a fairly dense area, but most of it's riverfront, so we pay a lot of property tax. But none of the ditches are maintained. There's no storm culverts. There's no sidewalks. The roads are so small you can't get two cars down. It just seems like that part of town isn't getting the same thing they get in Mandarin or South Side when you look at the general neighborhoods there.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. And that gets back to this whole idea that we are a tale of two cities, that if you're south and east of the St. John's River, Chris, chances are you're going to have a much more well put together community in terms of infrastructure and services than if you live north or west of the St. Johns River.
Well, and Scott, you raise an excellent point, and this is exactly why I think the community needs to take this sort of celebration of consolidation and use it to recommit to making sure that every part of Jacksonville, whatever side of the river you're on, has access to the infrastructure, economic development, quality public schools that were promised
and
in the
campaign.
By the way,
you know. The schools had actually been disaccredited. Like
That's
the schools
right.
were falling apart. I think that was more than anything what isn't it what lent this sense of urgency to this vote?
That was certainly a major factor. That and local officials, multiple local officials being indicted were huge factors in this. But Scott, the point you raise is exactly what I think the community needs to focus on as we celebrate this very historic occasion, recommitting to keeping the promise that every part of Jacksonville would benefit from consolidation's virtues.
Walter is in Ponte Vedra. Go ahead, Walter.
Yes, one issue that I don't see raised very often on this is the fact that the number of at-large council people that are in the Jacksonville city government, or city council, really dilutes the political, is used also to dilute the political power of the minority community that's so underserved. It's similar to St. John's County, where all the county commissioners are elected, you know, at-large, countywide. And so the needs of some minority communities like, say, West St. Augustine or even, you know, a poor community like out at Hastings are underserved because of that political dynamic.
Yeah. Thanks, Walter. Yes. And that we've been talking about that. He's exactly right.
Well, and there have been, you know, again, the way the city council is structured is there are 14 district council people. There are 5 at-large districts who represent the entire community. When consolidation first started, those at-large folks could live anywhere in the community. One of the changes that was made subsequent to the consolidation vote was the requirement, mainly to address some of the concerns that Walter raised, was that the at-large council members live in certain sort of parts of the city to try and achieve some balance. But one reform idea that has been floated over the years is to just go to a district-based council system.
No more at-larges.
I've heard that suggestion before, and perhaps that is something that will come up during the Charter Review Commission. I think for the by and large, the system that we have has been one that seems to enjoy support. So, again, we'll see if these proposals for reform are successful or not. But there have been some tweaks along the way to try and help achieve some balance. I think we still need to look at that and see whether those tweaks have been enough to make sure that there is appropriate balance on the council.
And hopefully you've started a conversation today that will continue as the city marks this anniversary and we look ahead. Always so fascinating to speak with you. Chris Hand, it's a pleasure. He is the co-author of America, the Owner's Manual. Thanks so much for sharing your insights today.
Thank you, Melissa. And very quickly, a point of personal privilege. In addition to being Consolidation's 50th anniversary, it's my parents' 53rd wedding anniversary today. So I want to tell them happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, Mr. and Mrs. Hand. That's great news, too. All right. Well, much more still ahead later. We're going to hear about some new apps that might help your kids with their schoolwork as they head back to class. That's from our own tech guru, Ray Hollister. But up next, Russian intrigue inside the pages of a book. A look at A Gentleman in Moscow after this.
It can save lives, but it can also destroy the planet. Air conditioning. Every unit contains chemical refrigerants that absorb and release heat to help bring the temperature down. The chemicals are better than they once were, but we still need to find a better way to refrigerate. Cutting through the noisy debate on AC. Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Calling all educators. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, September 16th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 event will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues. Learn new ways to engage students and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. It's a tale of Russian intrigue from a century ago. In the New York Times bestseller, A Gentleman in Moscow, author Amor Towles transports us to the Metropole, the famed Moscow hotel that attracted movie stars, Russian royalty, and even Bolsheviks plotting revolution. Now, if all the recent headlines about Russia have you curious to read about that country's fascinating history, this novel is for you. And it's our choice this month in our First Coast Connect book club. Leader Stacy Goldring is here now, and she brought some Moscow mules. Actually, no, she brought Dunkin' Donuts coffee. But maybe we can have some Moscow mules tonight.
I would love that.
I know,
man,
that would
like
be
that,
fun.
Like wouldn't in
it?
An IV.
Yeah. Exactly. Mainline it right into the veins. In the meantime, I'm going to mainline this coffee you were kind enough to bring me. And what good timing for this. It's a novel about Russia. Of course, Russia's in the headlines a lot, but this is a fictional tale. Oh, you even brought up like a Russian furry hat with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I'm wearing this lovely hat. You know, I bought this to go up north once when I did that. And I think I have worn it more here as a prop because you always need a prop for radio.
You look like Anna Karenina in that thing.
Oh, do I? I am. But I do not plan on jumping in front of any trains. Not that that's a spoiler.
Good. That's good to hear.
I think I've worn it more either metaphorically or physically in talking about books lately than who to thunk it. So I thought about it. And this is what I'm thinking, so I take off the Russian hat because I am a capitalist. This is marketing.
Tell me about this book. Marketing. What is A Gentleman in Moscow?
First of all, it's a book about Moscow, so it's going to sell, right?
Sure.
Okay, end of story. All right, this book is so beautiful, I don't even know where to start. So I will start with the author because his name starts with A, and every chapter in the book starts with A. I don't know why, but I do know that this author is so incredibly organized in his amazing brain that I'm sure there's a reason for it, that maybe someone who has read the book can call in and tell us how much they enjoyed it, because I know that this book was just beloved this summer by many people. And here's why. It is a book about a man during the Bolshevik Revolution who's put under house arrest, okay, because he's a count. So he's a member of the, you know, the elite.
So the revolutionaries mm-hmm. suspect him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's, you know, accused of, you know, being a count. And therefore, he's not of the people. And he is put under house arrest in the Metropole Hotel, which really exists in Moscow. And so he has to stay there for decades. So this could be a
decades.
Very... Decades.
Why?
Because that is his sentence. And you
That's
would
not a bad place to live.
No,
I guess,
it's not.
If you have to be imprisoned.
If you have to be imprisoned, but you know, there's a thread that goes throughout this book. Master your circumstances, or they will master you.
So he adapts to this.
He adapts, and he makes what being in one building become almost like a labyrinthian journey. The rooms open up, stories open up, people open up and unfold in front of him. So even though he never leaves the Metropole, It is a journey into the mind, into the hearts of characters, into history. And here is how he set up the book, Melissa, like an accordion. And what I mean by that is we're dealing with the writer who is also, he's a numbers guy. He's from Wall Street. So he's left brain, right brain, but we love him anyway. And so what he does is the chapters advance by doubling in principle, meaning first a day goes by, then 2 days, then five, then 10 days, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, a year, you know, 2 years, 4 years, 16 years. And then, like an accordion, the time starts to compress. You have 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, 1 year, 3 months, 6 months, 5 days, 1 hour, minutes, seconds. And that's how he builds suspense. That's how he structures his story.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And this and the protagonist, by the way, is Count Rostov.
Right. He's one of about 30 characters, and they all have Russian names. So I made a list of the characters, and I still couldn't keep track. There are so many characters, but they're all very interesting. And one of the characters in this book also appears in his other book that he wrote before this called Rules of Civility, which also was a beautiful book. And if you know who that character is, you can call and let us know. Otherwise, I'm not giving it away. The other theme that runs through this book, according to the author, is there is no theme. And that's what I love about this guy. He, in an interview or on a website, I don't know where I researched it, but he says, if you find out what the theme of the book is and you happen to see me in an airport, just come up and let me know. So here's a man.
Then why do you write it?
Because he used to go to this place in Geneva once a year, some hotel, okay? And you write about what you know. So he would go to the hotel every year because that's a rough life, going to a hotel in Geneva every year. And he noticed he started to see the same people. And he was like, wait a minute. What's going on here?
Are they living here?
Right. And why are they returning? So that the inquiring mind wanted to know. So you put on top of that, what do you love? What does he love? He loves to write about a time period that is just far enough away that someone can't really say, oh, you're wrong, but is close enough where we feel we have some connection. So he loves like the 1920s and the 1930s, a little 1940s. And so this is the time period that he decided to write about. And he's also a man who loves Russian literature. So Russian literature, Pushkin, all the great authors, march by in this book as well.
They're characters in the book.
They're characters who are referred to or are an amalgam and put into other characters.
And let me ask you,
sure.
This is a novel, but does it give you a window into the Russian psyche?
Yes. And this is how he explains that. You know, if you're going to argue with someone, and let's say we're going to argue and you're going to tell me that the art project that I made was really ugly and you want to destroy it, I will say, oh, no, you won't, Melissa. I'll destroy my own art project. Huh. And then when I decide that I like it, I will build it up again. I will build it again. And this is how Russia, through the eyes of our author, has dealt with its psyche. You know, we all have some kind of weird pathos. We all have our get-ups. And as far as he's concerned in Russia, what happens is here is a people who are very proud of their culture. But when something bubbles up and there is a cancer, they will kill their own selves before they will let anyone else kill them. And then they will build their own selves back up and they will go ahead and alter the history.
So it's pure stubbornness.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I probably because it's so cold, no one wants to give an inch. You know, you just want to stay like this. You want to stay like this all the time. But the Metropole Hotel is real and really does exist. Famous people and authors have stayed there, like John Steinbeck. And, you know, you write about what you know. And in this case, there are certain things that happen in the book that are so much fun. He plays a thimble game with the young girl in the book. And you shut your eyes, and I'm going to hide a thimble in the room, and you have to find it. And it was such a clever little wonderful way to bind the two generations in friendship. And he really played that in real life with his aunt. So he drew on this little thimble game to become an integral part of the book. He also introduces a real character in the book, Harrison Salisbury, who was a Moscow bureau chief in New York back in the 30s or 40s, whatever. I know I have that wrong. But he has a personal connection to him because when our author was a young man, he did one of these, put a message in a bottle and throw it in the ocean. And he did that. And this reporter from the New York Times found it and reached out to them. And they started a lifelong friendship.
And that really happened.
Yes. So I really, I just love that.
And if you're listening to Stacey's excitement over this book, you get a sense of why she's such an amazing book club leader. Ah, she so just sweet. Had a physical book club summer event about a gentleman in Moscow. She's so popular that it actually sold out.
It was great. It
and,
was really great.
You know, this is our book club selection for the month. This is Stacey's pick. You can go to the Jacksonville Public Library. They are our partner in the book club here on the show. And check out an extra copy. They should have some extra ones of A Gentleman in Moscow, the New York Times bestseller. Always so good to talk to you. I can't wait to see what you're reading next month.
Oh, you know, it's some catch that catch 22.
We'll be right back.
Young people just getting started in this economy are struggling to afford housing. Baby boomers may have the answer for them.
Our house sort of begs to have people in it because it's sort of empty with just two people.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Different generations under one roof, just not family. That story coming to you next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Summertime is learning time. WJCT and the Jacksonville Public Library are partnering to help families fight this summer slide with educational programming and online resources that encourage learning at home. Log on to wjct.org/education/summer to find summer reading lists, activity books, early literacy development tools, and much more. Help your child prepare for the new school year at wjct.org/education/summer.
An unarmed African-American teenager was shot and killed
on the next Radiolab.
How many people do we see killed by the police each year?
Are police shooting more black people than white people? We don't know.
There's no national statistics on...
No one keeps accurate statistics on police shootings.
I've met 400 other mothers who's lost their children.
I cannot believe that my profession, in some cases, is that out of control.
That's on the next Radiolab.
Saturdays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, back to school is just around the corner, so you need to be getting your kids ready for class, including their tech. Now, this can include clearing off games and files they downloaded over the summer, making sure virus software is updated and security updates are installed, and more. Just a little bit of preparation can make for a much smoother school year. Tech expert Ray Hollister of our popular Deemable Tech podcast is here now with some great back-to-school tech tips. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So I'm very interested in this. I have two daughters. Mm-hmm. What do I need to be doing to make sure they're ready?
So I explain this like, think of it like your backpack. You know, when you start to school, the first thing you do is like, if you don't get a new backpack, you clean out that old backpack and make sure everything's ready to go. And that's what you got to do with your technology, with your laptops, your tablets, mobile phones. Just take a look and sit down with your kids and get that technology ready so that they are ready to be prepared for school.
What are some things that you should do? Clean out old files and that's gumming up the works?
Yeah, the first thing I say, and I'm not going to tell any parent how to parent their child, but sit down and look at those games because during the summer they download a ton of stuff. And you want to make sure, do you still need that game? You know, do you still need this game? maybe if you're somebody who's as easily distracted as I am, it's just you need to wipe the slate clean and start fresh and just focus on school.
And endure the howls and screams.
Exactly.
Okay, that is good advice. I'm going to do
that. A lot of those games, you know, they've finished them. They've beat the games. They don't need them on their phone anymore. They just don't think it's time to delete them.
Now, you have some great advice, too, on apps for kids' mobile phones and tablets to help them study and make school better.
Actually, there are some really great apps that have come out in recent years that really I wish I had back in high school and college.
Yeah.
One, for instance, is called My Homework. It's like a planner for your homework and your projects. So you can keep on track of, okay, did I get that finished? Did I get this finished? And as a parent, what's great is you can see, oh, there's a science project due in a month, so you don't find out, you know, the Friday before the Monday that it's due.
Right. Now, does the child have to enter in everything?
That's true. They have to enter in the information.
They entered in, but you, mom and dad, can check it.
Exactly.
That's good.
It's really nice. And one of my favorite things that I found is called the Desmond Graphing Calculator. You know those TI-84s that, you know, cost like $100?
Uh-huh.
The Desmond Graphing Calculator is a free, open source app that's on the web, and anybody can use it for free, and they're allowing it to be used on tests now.
You can use it when they take the test.
Yeah.
They'll let you use it.
And a lot of
the tests, they collect the kids' phones during school.
Well, a lot of the tests are done online now, and you can actually use the Desmond calculator on the website as well.
Oh, very good advice.
I can't wait for that to become more popular.
Okay. And you've got some other ones, too. You've got a really good list here, Ray. What else?
So one of my favorite that my family has been doing, me, my wife, and my daughter, is called Duolingo. So actually, Tom Braun, my old co-host from Dean of Old Tech, he introduced me to this one. And it lets you learn a foreign language for free. It's a game. So it's a lot of fun to play, but you're learning how to, you're building your vocabulary, learning how the language works. And you can even set up little clubs where you compete against other people in your club. So me, Zoe, and Amber are all in this club learning Spanish together.
Cute. And last but not least, there's even an app that features, artificial intelligence, AI.
All right. So this one, folks might get the wrong impression of. It's called Socratic. And what it does is it gives you help for your homework. So let's say you're working on a math assignment, for example, and you hold your camera up over the assignment or the question, and it will actually give you the answer for you. It'll break down the answer into parts and help you answer it.
No way. Well, this is all great. Now, for people that maybe are driving along and they couldn't remember all these apps, can they look at your website?
Absolutely. Go to boldcityit.com/backtoschool, and it'll have a breakdown of everything for you.
It's that time of year. He's our own tech expert, Ray Hollister. Go to his Bold City IT website for all your tech needs. Great advice. I'm definitely downloading a few of these. My daughters will be at my direction.
Great.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app to listen anytime. Next on 1A is the NFL colluding against quarterback Colin Kaepernick. That's the question that will be asked. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.